Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is strategies to empower and support caregivers with special guest, Luke Russell. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of season 2 on Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. This podcast is hosted by the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion, and my name is Holly Raffel, and I have the privilege of serving as the faculty director of the center. Today, we are welcoming Luke Russell to the podcast. Since 2022, Luke has served as the executive director for the National Alliance of Mental Illness of Ohio, leading the NAMI Ohio team to enhance the quality of life for individuals with mental illness and their families. Prior to joining NAMI Ohio in 2020 as deputy director, Luke served as the director of government relations and public affairs for AARP Ohio for over 17 years. In addition, Luke has held leadership roles in mental health and developmental disabilities organization. Luke is a graduate of The Ohio State University and holds a master's degree in health administration from Ohio University. So he's both a Buckeye and a Bobcat. This month, the center is focusing on supporting caregivers, from providing care to a family to providing care professionally as part of paid work. Caregiving is an aspect of life for many Ohioans. In addition to his professional roles, I think it's important for our listeners to know that Luke has lived experience with caregiving. Luke is the nephew of someone who lived with schizophrenia his entire teen and adult life, the father of a son with developmental disabilities, and the brother-in-law to an individual with a bipolar disorder. As such, Luke devotes his personal and professional values to assuring NAMI Ohio's success in carrying out its mission, and I believe will be such a resource for our audience on the topic of caregiving. I know that I've been looking forward to discussing this important topic with Luke, and I have a feeling this content will resonate with our listeners as well. Welcome, and thanks for joining us, Luke.
Well, thank you, Holly, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience on caregiving, specifically for those with serious mental illness and their families.
Absolutely, Luke. I'd like to get this conversation started with how we start all of our podcasts. Beyond the Bio is a time where you can share with our listeners something about who you are, beyond the bio that I just read. Maybe a little bit about what your work looks like on the daily, which part of your work you enjoy the most, or a little nugget about who you are as a person.
Well, thank you, Holly. So as mentioned, I'm Luke Russell. I'm executive director here at NAMI. And, you know, for me personally, the joy of having this role is really engaging with people. In a lot of cases, it's with caregivers. And as you mentioned in my bio, I have four children, one of them with developmental disability. We're also foster and adoptive parents. So we do some caregiving on the side. Now that we're empty nesters, we're getting actually back into foster care. We adopted my son out of foster care. And so, you know, it's just kind of in my bones, I guess. You know, I grew up with a family of social workers and teachers. And so around the kitchen table with my family, a lot of times, a lot of the discussions are about people in need, people that have maybe not as much as we have, or even the support system to do the caregiving you need. So that's where my heart is. You know, a little nugget about me. I met my wife in Athens. She graduated from Athens High School, and she graduated as from Ohio University in degree in social work. So she started off as a licensed independent or licensed social worker, then went on to get her master's in education. Now she's a teacher intervention specialist. So even in her line of work, she's called me, you know, seeking help for a family in need. So, you know, a little nugget about, you know, the work here at NAMI is NAMI was formed by caregivers. So in the sense, the family started NAMI, and it was also not just to help the individuals that they love, but how do they help one another? And that's really what caregiving needs more of in the current status that it is.
Thank you for that introduction and for sharing a little bit about yourself. My husband and I too met here on Athens campus and loved Athens so much, we decided to stay and raise our family here as well. For those of us in our listening audience who NAMI Ohio is a new resource, can you just explain a little bit more about the ways that NAMI Ohio serves Ohioans?
Just to give a little bit of a history here, NAMI National was formed in Wisconsin in 1979. And it was a group of family members coming together who had adult children with serious mental illness. And they said, you know, we're trying to navigate a fragmented system. you were going through the process of deinstitutionalization. More people were in the community, and how could they find community sports? A couple of years later in Ohio in 1982, so when I came up 42 years ago, NAMI Ohio formed. Again, a group of parents sitting around the table deciding how do we better serve our adult children was basically where it went, because a lot of times the schools were very involved with the younger folks with mental illness. But so when people got out, where do they go and how do they get the help? So NAMI was formed. Again, our mission is quality of life for the individuals with serious mental illness. And also there, and if you notice our mission statement, it says, and their families. So it's kind of this holistic approach to, you know, someone who has a debilitating mental illness needs somebody to help them. And so where does NAMI fit in that puzzle? We do education, support, and advocacy. That's our role. That's our bread and butter. And when I say education, support, and advocacy, each of those have a little nuanced piece to it. But it's part of our mission in terms of when we educate, it's just not educating, you know, lawmakers and decision makers. It's educating providers, educating local boards of mental addiction, alcohol, drug addiction, and mental health. It's educating our members. And we do all that for free, by the way. So we don't charge any family for any services we provide. So the education piece, particularly nationally, we have evidence-based programs on family-to-family, peer-to-peer, NAMI Basics, NAMI Homefront. These are programs that are 8 to 10 weeks. Families go through them. They learn the ins and outs. Peers go through them. They learn how to better manage their illness. We also offer in the support area, not only support to families, but also support to the system. Like, oh, we serve on a lot of committees where they want the voice of the family and the consumers involved. We bring that voice. On the practical level and support, we offer family support group and what we call NAMI Connections, which is the NAMI peer-to-peer counseling group that are run by peers. Every day in the state of Ohio, there is an education or support group happening every day, and we do not charge. So we always say we're in the gap. You know, if somebody's coming out of an inpatient situation or out of a crisis situation, or maybe even out of incarceration because they had a mental illness, sometimes NAMI's that gap. You know, we'll plug somebody into a support group, or we'll get a family signed up for family to family. And then the third part of the education support, and then advocacy. So a lot of times people think of advocacy, they think of maybe advocating at the federal level, again, on policy rules and things like that, or at the state level with the administration or maybe the General Assembly, but it's also advocating for individual families. So our helpline coordinator on a daily basis is advocating for somebody calls, she calls them complex cases. They're not just looking for a referral. They're not looking for a local NAMI, or they want to talk to me or somebody else, but somebody who has really an issue that needs really some navigation or some case management. Those comprehensive or enhanced cases, you know, we're advocating to get that person into potentially a housing unit or into some sort of treatment sooner than what's being offered. So we do a lot around that kind of work. So those are the three. And then I always say, you know, education, support, and advocacy. We also listen and we lead. So at NAMI, we're listening to what's going on in the field. And so when we're doing this thing about caregiving, we are hearing more and more about the struggles of caregivers. And there's multiple reasons: COVID, the economy, aging population, all those things. We're listening. And then when we go back to talk to the administration or talk to the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, hey, what are we doing around caregiving? What are we doing around respite care? What are we doing about other programs? And then leading is sometimes being the voice in the room. And I like to say this at NAMI, sometimes we're the conscience. I mean, we're the one saying, this is what's needed, and not, well, we don't have enough money, we don't have resources, we don't have people. We're like, okay, we understand that. But at the same time, there are still families out there that are struggling. So that's probably the main role, the roles we do. And I also, we have 38 affiliates that represent all but about 7 counties in the state, where like NAMI Athens, if you call me and you need somebody, we can plug them into NAMI Athens. If you call me and you're in Cleveland, we'll plug in to NAMI Greater Cleveland. They offer, you know, support programs, education programs. Some of our local NAMIs even have client navigators like we have to help people at the local systems get the help they need. So you know, we're really a network, an alliance of people. We have the national NAMI. We have a NAMI in every state. And then in Ohio, we have the most affiliates of any state office in Ohio. We're the largest affiliate-led NAMIs.
Well, Luke, that's an impressive array of services, not only at the local level, but the state and the federal level. So really appreciate all the work that NAMI is doing. And one thing that struck me is that you're offering all the services at no cost. So I'm just curious, where is your main revenue stream? Where is the funding that comes? Because you and I both know that nothing is free. So if you're offering services at no cost, where's the support and financial backing coming from?
Yeah, and at NAMI, a lot of the funding comes through, it could be NAMI Walks, which is one of our volunteer type of events. It's also a stigma reducer by, we do NAMI walks. We write grants. We get some donations, and sometimes those can be good donations. The National NAMI got a donation last year for $30 million that went out to the states. So there's a lot of, I call it like, it's either a three or four legged stool. You have, donations, you have fundraising, you have grant writing, and then you have, other endowments and foundations that do the work. And sometimes it's a lot of volunteer work for our local NAMIs, and a lot of, people putting in the time that don't get paid to do it. A lot of our trainers, we don't pay a lot of money to. They're trained to train, but they're trained to train other parents. They are parents. They want to do this. But at the same time, we try to at least offset any costs they have. So it's a challenge, like all nonprofits, and it's always changing, but a lot of it's grant writing, a lot of it's fundraising, a lot of it's working with national foundations and local foundations.
It sounds like you have a really diverse portfolio in terms of your funding, but also in terms of your staffing. So really appreciate the strategic thinking that goes behind that and for your leadership. And as we begin our deeper dive into caregiving, I'm curious how you would define the role of caregiver. By and large, I think most people, whether they recognize it or not, engage in some type of caregiving. While some serve as paid caregivers, where direct caregiving is part of their formal job role, like home health or personal care aides and registered nurses, others serve in helping professions, like you mentioned, sitting around your kitchen table, where caregiving is more of an implied role. Social workers, therapists, childcare workers, teachers, and religious leaders. And others serve as informal and unpaid caregivers, such as an adult child caring for an aging parent, a spouse caring for a sick spouse, a sibling helping a sibling with a physical or mental disability, or even a friend supporting a friend through a tough time. So to set our stage for our conversation today, can you share insight with our listeners about who is considered a caregiver and what that like?
This is a great topic for us right now. We've advocated at the state level, particularly here in Ohio. We estimate about 80% of the caregiving for someone with serious mental illness is a family member. And that's unpaid. They're just doing it because they're the family member. We're starting to see that shift from parents to siblings as we're seeing the baby boom generation get older. They can no longer do it. So siblings are now more involved than ever before, I think. That number continues to rise. We know that nationally for mental health, there's about 8.4 million caregivers who are caring for someone with a mental health condition. They average about 32 hours a week. It usually lasts about 9 years. And there's a lot of, here's how I say it. It's like having two jobs. It's like another full-time job. And what's, I think, another uniqueness to mental illness is if you're caring for someone, like myself, we have a son who we're guardians, he has a developmental disability. It's pretty consistent. We know what his disability is, what his abilities are. We know, he works, he drives a car, he's got some speech and some other things, but we know what we're getting every day. With mental illness, the mental illness disease itself is not consistent. It goes back and forth. So, for a year, you may have someone with a diagnosis of schizophrenia who's able to hold a job, do whatever they want, and then something happens and, the illness, comes back, at least the symptoms of the illness, and then they have to take a break. And then, if they moved out of the house, they may be moving back in. It's not stagnant. It's a constant revolving change of how we do it. But you know, was it Rosalind Carter? You probably heard this one. You know, she's there are four kind of caregivers, you know, those who have been a caregiver, those who are currently caregiving, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need one. And I think we've all been in that role. I'm not at the point where my parents are old enough that I'm their caregiver, but more and more, there are things like every now and then we're recommending to them, you know, and just because of maybe physical limitations, like we got to get somebody to help you with your yard, you know, we got to find somebody to help with this. In the mental health space, that goes on for years. It's not 20 year. I mean, a lot of times it's, you know, if someone's diagnosed at a young age, you're going to be involved. And by the way, sometimes it's not even somebody who lives with you in the mental health space. My brother-in-law, who actually lives in Athens, we, from a distance, help him, which he appreciates mightily. But we also know that we need to check in once a week. And every now and then we need to check in with somebody who's helping down there, who he's involved with. And honestly, it works. I mean, it works kind of for everybody because there's another brother in Cleveland who helps out. So what you get is you've got, you know, two families kind of sharing that role of trying to help out. And it may be just going down to visit, maybe sending money. It may be talking with someone to make sure the medications are accurate. So there's a lot of patience involved because it's not that consistent caregiving. You know, if somebody, I remember when my grandfather had a stroke and my parents became his caregiver, they kind of knew at some point it kind of got, okay, this is our new normal and this is what we have to do. With mental illness, I would argue the challenge with it is it's not stable. There's always kind of a little bit of yin and yang in terms of, okay, everything's going great. And then all of a sudden it's not. And then maybe long periods of time, it's going really good. And then there's a crisis situation. And so it really takes somebody who can think about how to manage that. And then again, the not only the financial cost, the time and the resources, but just the emotional. You know, mental illness usually strikes between 18 and 21. A lot of calls we get, somebody says, I just got a call from Bowling Green State. This happened. And a mom was on the phone with me and her daughter was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And she didn't know what schizophrenia was, let alone now I've got to try to manage medications and schedules and things. And so that's where NAMI tries to step up and say, okay, let's get you in a family-to-family class. Or actually, the first thing we do is we tell people to go to our website and go to NAMI.org, the national website, and look up schizophrenia and all the resources that are there just initially. And then let's get you into a family-to-family, then get you with some family members and maybe your daughter with a NAMI who can help her remotely help. So she can stay in school, get her degree, and live like the rest of us want to live. You know, we all want to go out and get a job and have a family and do what we need to do. That's our goal. And every caregiver has that role. They want the best for that individual they're caring for. They wouldn't be caring for.
Thank you so much for that description. It sounds like, you know, while there are some things universal to caregivers, there are also some things that are unique with the population who has been diagnosed with severe and persistent mental illness. And oftentimes it comes with the ebb and flow, but also when things aren't going well, there's a series of cascading events that can sort of spin rather quickly. And that could lead to caregivers, you know, experiencing hardship, right? So whether someone is a formal caregiver or an informal role, any caregiver can experience burnout. And caregiver burnout is defined by the Cleveland Clinic as a state of physical, emotional, and mental exhaustion that can happen when you dedicate time and energy to manage the health and safety of someone else. And you alluded to this, Luke, like it's a full-time job on top of a full-time job. So from your perspective, what are the most significant challenges a caregiver faces that might lead to experiencing burnout?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at our mental health system, everybody was in agreement. We don't want to warehouse people in big institutions. Athens had one of the largest, and I've been there and we've done stories on it. When we moved people to the community, the money didn't necessarily follow the individual. So what happened was we went from these institutions where people were cared for. I mean, and in some cases they had community, like they lived with the same people day in and day out, and they had friends and they did that. When we deinstitutionalized and people went in the community, a lot of that effort and work went to the families. because the system wasn't quite ready. Even today, we lack housing. We lack crisis services. How many people with mental illness end up in an emergency room? How many people with mental illness because of their behaviors end up in the criminal justice system? Those two things alone are a huge burden to families. When you get a call from the police and they say, hey, you know, your brother, we know he doesn't mean any harm, but he thinks the lady above him's listening to his phone. We need you guys to come down here and do something. We don't want to take him to jail because he doesn't mean any harm and we know him and all that stuff. But the stress of that, at any moment you could be at an ER, or you could be at a police station, or there could be, I'm very involved in our crisis intervention teams, a statewide program to train police officers. And how many times parents who present to police officers in the academies and training sessions, their biggest fear of calling the police is that something physical harm will come to their loved one because of their behaviors. And they know, like, they're not going to hurt anybody, but it may come across that way. That is an emotional stress that nobody wants. I mean, and mental illness can be a really mean disease because there are times when these situations come and there's not enough crisis intervention, what we're now calling mobile response crisis, versus law enforcement response. That's one issue. The other thing is respite. You know, I'm in the DD system. When your kid's 10 years old, 12 years old, whatever, you are offered, and you know that there's a respite program out there for a break if you need one, or there's some sort of, your kid's little, you're learning the ropes. You kind of have time to plan. Again, mental illness, because it strikes later in life, people don't even know what resources are available. They may not even know there's a NAMI out there that offers free classes on how to better, manage people's medications and, how better to manage your own life and take care of yourself. People don't even know we exist. And, when people are young and they're in school, they're like, okay, these are resources that the local county offers to people with developmental disabilities. In mental illness, we may not quite have that outreach. And the other issue is mental illness still has a stigma. And that then creates people not sharing with other people in an outlet with their emotions and their struggles, because we always say mental illness isn't a casserole illness. If I call and say, I have this, I have cancer, everybody brings casserole. If you say, oh, my daughter was just diagnosed schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, people are a little bit iffy. There's still that stigma attached, which again, that then adds another layer of angst, anxiety. It's like now people think I was a bad mom, or they think I'm a bad dad, or whatever. And it's not that quite that way. And so we're still working on some of that. And the just complexities of navigating the system really creates a lot of stress for the caregiver and the burnout. And by the way, we do get the call every now and then, can't do it anymore. I'm done. And I need to find a group home. I can find some sort of housing. I had a case probably about a year ago. A lady lived in Dayton area. She was a nurse. She lived in Cleveland. She was a nurse. Two young kids, single mom. Her brother lived with her dad her whole life. He had schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. He had been hospitalized. Dad passed away. Dad was like 78, 79. She says, my brother's going to be discharged and he's only lived with my dad. So you got mental illness with a stressor and his home. And she's like, I'm a single mom and I'm a nurse with two kids. I can't take care of him. I don't even know where to turn. She had no clue where to go. And it was so heartbreaking because she was so worried about her brother, how he would respond. His best friend, the person who cared for him for 50 years, was gone. And so those are things that, I think are unique to kind of the mental health space.
And that's why you're here today, Luke, so we can make sure that people know about the resources of NAMI Ohio for caregivers, because as our podcast is about prioritizing prevention, when caregivers have the information and resources they need, we can prevent further complication into the caregiver's life, right? And also promote the best health outcome possible for their loved one. We know that research has long shown that caregivers can experience burnout and As always, for our listeners, our amazing podcast team will post links to those research in the show notes. So there's no need to take notes if you're driving or out for a walk. You just check our show notes and you'll get the links to the articles. The research also shows there's many negative impacts associated with burnout that impact the mental, emotional, and behavioral health of caregivers, such as anxiety, depression, and increased use of alcohol or other substances. These effects impact the caregiver, the person they are providing care, and the relationship that they have with one another, and also the relationships that caregivers have with other people outside of the caregiving relationship. So while you're working so hard to make sure that Ohioans with mental illness have the support they need, why is it important to also serve those family members and caregivers?
Yeah, thank you. And I think it goes back to kind of NAMI's formation, that there were a group of family members who were trying to help their loved ones who were adults with serious mental illness. And, you know, I see it at my board meetings. We have 28-member board, most with lived experience, a lot of parents. It's respite. It's camaraderie. It's learning from one another. Even being encouraged by one another to say, you know, hey, my son hasn't been hospitalized for a year. He's got a little job. He's doing this, or my daughter's doing this. It really is, you know, why NAMI's in being. Because again, even in our mission statement, it talks about serving the people with mental illness and making sure they have the services and supports and the treatment they need. But also it says, and their families, because we know they're linked directly just because of the way the system's worked. And NAMI, that's why we're here. I mean, NAMI can help the caregiver. I mean, half of our programming is, you know, our family to family group. We offer the family support group. We offer, there's actually an abbreviated family to family group, which is 8 weeks. I think it's a couple hours each day, once a week. And I have board members who have told me that program saved their family's life because their family was just in disarray. Then they realized, number one is they're not alone. And number two is they have a resource like NAMI they can lean on. And they have people they can talk to who've lived the experience. So again, a good support for our people are knowing the other families are out there and they can learn from one another. You know, a lot of our family members, even our board members, we have some in their 70s and 80s. I'll see them at a board meeting talking to a parent who, you know, in their 30s and 40s, and they're sharing their life experiences and what they wish they'd have done different. And it's little things. I mean, you know, I wish we wouldn't have had them move out until they were stable. I heard that the other day. I heard one of our board members say, worst thing we did, we got my son an apartment. He got isolated. You know, it was just the worst thing that could have happened. And then somebody else had mentioned, you know, my son didn't really want to do a group home and then went to a group home. It was a really good one. And now they have friends and they go once a week and they go bowling and they do these things. For the caregiver, that's just a peace of mind that my loved one's being cared for and there's something for them. Probably the biggest stressor is they do a lot of their own case management. They do a lot of their own transportation. They do a lot of their own out of their own financial pocket. And then we mentioned earlier, the average caregiver for someone with mental illness is 32 hours a week. I mean, that is a full-time job. So how do we foster the connections and how do we give people a sense of belonging? And that's really what NAMI's about. I mean, you know, National NAMI, I think, uses the tagline, you're not alone. There are many of us out here. One out of five people have a mental illness. Every family is affected. You know, I have a daughter who has some mental illness and, Even me, I've gone to our staff and other board members to kind of get advice or, you know, what should we be doing here? So again, that sense of belonging, that sense of community, and how can we help one another? And I'll tell you what, it's also therapeutic when I see someone who's a caregiver and has been help someone else. It makes them feel good about themselves that they were able to pay it forward. And we use a term here sometimes at NAMI Ohio, and I've heard board members say this. Our board, former board president, Judge Joyce Campbell, who runs a mental health court, she said, we try to turn our pain into purpose. And I really think that's a unique saying because, you know, in society now, we just don't think that way sometimes. And I think, you know, we can get very isolated with social media. We can get very isolated by not being in clubs or joining other things. NAMI gives people the opportunity to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I think when they turn that purpose into pain, you know, it gives them meaning in life. And by the way, people with mental illness and their families want what everybody else wants. You know, they want shelter. They want, you know that their physical needs are met, and they want community. They want to belong. They want to be part of something. And NAMI gives a lot of people, even we have parents who have lost their love, their caregiver, you know, they're no longer caregivers because the person is not here anymore. And I have board members who continue to say, I'll do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to use what happened in my life to help other people. And it gives them a purpose that again, it fills some void in our soul that just makes, and we all want that. And so that's where NAMI steps in here.
Well, Luke, we've been talking about the heavy stuff here today, the fact that most of us are providing some type of care, paid or unpaid, formally or implied, at home or at work, the challenges caregivers face day in and day out, and how burnout manifests itself in the body and mind. Because it's likely that we'll all find ourselves in a caregiving role, let's shift our conversation into discussing how can we keep on caring without getting burned out in the process. So with the understanding of the kinds of challenges we're seeing for anyone who's providing care and the unique challenges for those who are providing care with a for a loved one experiencing mental illness, it's really important for us to consider ways to prevent caregiver burnout before it manifests. And also is that we identify symptoms of burnout in its early stages so we can prevent those negative consequences. Most of our listeners are aware that social and community support is a social determinant of health, and you've alluded to this in our conversation several times. So what is your perspective on how relationships and community support promote well-being for caregivers?
I think asking, you know, folks to examine their current situation and really sitting down and saying, do I have the support network I need? And I talk to a lot of families and they don't. I mean, and when immediately the first thing I say, you should be involved with NAMI. And so if you live in Athens, I'm going to give you our executive director's number down there. Find out when the family support group is. Just show up. You know, that there's no pay. There's no sign up sheet. You know, we like to know you're coming, but, you know, really get involved and learn from others. And I think also, just like any other stressor in life, looking at, you know, are they getting the right sleep? You know, even the financial piece of it is, I mean, we don't do a lot with that at NAMI, but even learning from other people about, I've talked to people who I know the person's eligible for Social Security and they don't apply. They haven't applied. So they're paying everything out of pocket. And I'm like, so we have a guy who used to work, he's retired. He loves NAMI, loves the work we do. He helps people get on Social Security. And right now he's about 25 for 25. So a lot of times if somebody, a family will call me and I'll connect them with this gentleman and he sits down, he has a form he completes that they turn in with the application. And he's like, why would the family's paying for everything? In some cases they're going broke. So just that engagement on educating themselves can be a way of caring for themselves. Cause all of a sudden the relief, it's like, oh, or, you know, they don't have Medicaid and they were on my insurance and now they're not. And they're out there. It's like, that's the reason they go to the ER because it's the only place they can get service. It's like, no, we think we can help with that. And again, it could be NAMI Ohio. It could be your local NAMI, but really looking for ways to connect people to education, also the support, and then even the advocacy piece. And it may not be me. It may be another family member. We have a lady in Athens. I won't say her last name. Her name's Ann. And Ann in Athens, who has lived experience. She's on my board. She's awesome. And she will literally help families walk through the maze. And I can't imagine what that does for those families to know that there's someone who's following up, who's making phone calls, checking in. Did you get that appointment? If you didn't, let me know. I'll call the director because they know the people. And so a lot of times I think when we look at, you know, taking care of your own health, you know, sleep, finances. I mean, all those things that everybody needs to kind of monitor. And sometimes we're not great at it. But especially if you're caring for somebody more than, you know, even 5 or 10 hours a week, you really need to think about, am I able to do this? And, you know, I mean, even, you know, I mentioned earlier, I have a son with developmental disability. As he's gotten older, quite frankly, it's become easier for my wife and I. So we've decided, you know, we, I mean, we look at our calendar, we make some assessments, and we say, you know what, we could probably go back and do some foster care now. When he was little, we couldn't. We told him we couldn't take any more kids and help out and be a caregiver because he was taking up a lot of our time when he was little. And he needed that. So it worked out fine. But I think just kind of being aware, you know, like, say no, you know, and sometimes it may be saying no to the person you're caregiving for. You know, sometimes it's no, I can't do this every single day. You know, we hear that every now and then. Well, they want me to take them to, you know, Walmart every day, or they want to go to the store every day. And it's like, well, you have to say no. We're going to go on these certain days, and you know, you have to put up some protection and barriers just for yourself. Because if the caregiver is not healthy, they're not going to be a very good caregiver to the person in need. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, because if they're not well, they're not going to be well. They're doing well, they can help the person that needs the caregiving.
I think that's really important point there, Luke, is the prevention and early identification of burnout. Because yeah. Once you know and you're self-aware as a caregiver, then you can take those steps to move forward in a way that's productive for you and productive for the person that is receiving the care as well. Yeah. And my goodness, Luke, time has flown by. And speaking of flying, we're getting close to the time where we need to land this plane. But before we do, I'd like to leave our listeners who want to learn more about supporting caregivers and preventing burnout with some resources. So where do you recommend our listeners go to learn more about supporting caregivers? And what's the best way to reach out to NAMI Ohio if someone's caring for a loved one with mental illness?
Yeah. And first off, please do reach out. If you are a caregiver, or you are a family member and you're not familiar with NAMI, or you're not involved with NAMI, I'm pleading with you to reach out to NAMI. We do not charge for any services there. I know we scratch the surface of the people in need. So if you go to I'm going to give you a couple things here, NAMIOhio.org, again, www.NAMIOhio.org. It lists all of our programs and services. There is also an affiliate map. So if you're listening to this and you're from Toledo, or Cleveland, or Athens, or Columbus, we have NAMIs in your local communities. And when you go to our map, it has their websites. And they usually have calendars of when they offer family support group, education group. You can also call. We have our phone is always answered. We also on our website have a chat function. So if you're looking for a resource, you can chat it. Danielle Smart is our client navigator here. She's an LISW. She is fantastic. Our number here is 800-686-2646. Again, 800-686-2646. I think this will be in the notes up for the podcast. But I implore you, even if you're not sure we're the right group, when people reach out to NAMI, what we provide is a voice. And we're the ones who will, if you call and you say, my son needs a provider and I live in Butler County, I'm making this up. We will try to find you a provider in Butler County who has openings to take your son, daughter, loved one, spouse. I mean, again, caregiving, we have our conference coming up May 3rd and 4th. We're going to open with a panel of a spouse, sibling, parent, and young person, a lived experience person. So we're going in that direction because we want people to know there are a lot of people out there just like you, and there are people who've kind of figured out how to navigate the system, or at least navigate it better. And I just implore people to reach out to NAMI, and because we are going to try to help educate, support, and advocate for your individual case. We look at each person as our goal is just to help one person. We can't fix the whole world. And I think the other thing I want to say is, and I'm kind of regressing a little bit what you said earlier, it's also incumbent upon NAMI, I think groups like yours, that we get out there and we market and educate. We don't like to use that word, but let people know we exist. Because I get calls and they said, somebody said I should call NAMI. I don't even know who you are. And within about 5 minutes, you go, bingo, this is what I was looking for. And we're like, okay, we can help. And so I just implore people to reach out to NAMI Ohio. We'll connect you with your local community. If you go to our webpage, there is a map and you can connect directly with them through that page. But we want to be a resource for any family in need.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Luke. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. And the tradition we have here on the Prioritizing Prevention podcast is to ask our guests a few rapid fire questions to close out our conversation. These are just meant for a way for our listeners to connect with you as a person and to be pure fun. All you have to do is answer with the first thing that comes to your mind.
Uh-oh.
I know, right? So the first question, in the spirit of our topic today, a question on caregiving. Would you rather have access to unlimited, high-quality in-home care or have technology that can fully automate most caregiving tasks?
The first. It's somebody to care for me.
Now a question aligned with our discussion on burnout prevention. Would you rather prioritize daily mini breaks for yourself throughout the caregiving routine or set aside a separate block of longer me time each week?
Separate block of me time.
Now, this question we ask everybody, you're reaching into a bowl of M&Ms. Are you looking for plain or peanut?
Plain.
Thank you so much, Luke, for sharing your time, your expertise, and your experience with us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you missed our last podcast, it was with Amy Hawthorne, the trauma-informed care coordinator with the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. During our conversation, we discussed the importance of recognizing responding to the effects of trauma at the individual, organizational, and community levels. We also took a deep dive into trauma-informed approaches to prevention. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing it with others, posting about it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and it keeps the conversation going. To catch all the latest from the center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, Facebook, at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Productions and supported by Sarah Sipes at the Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. Thank you both for your work to get positive prevention content out into the world.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services. And for more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.